You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Eternal and Transient Elements, The Cosmic Past of Humanity and the Mystery of Evil. Collected Works, Volume 184. This is Lecture 11, given on the 5th of October, 1918. You will have been able to learn from the many things I said about the Christ mystery that we must make distinction between the general progress of evolution at the time of this mystery on Golgotha and the new elements that came into human evolution through that mystery. You have learned that this is a continuous flow of powers that come from the spirits of the higher hierarchies and are part of man's original inherent nature, and that there are also two lateral streams, one luciferic, the other Ahrimanic. The luciferic and Ahrimanic streams came to a peak within human evolution exactly at the time of the mystery on Golgotha. In a sense, if one may put it like this, humanity faced the danger then of development going beyond this peak, which could upset the balance between Ahrimanic and luciferic activities for the whole of human evolution as it progressed. For the following had emerged in the course of this evolution. If we make progressing human evolution a straight line, there's a figure, we can say that this evolution has gone through, let us begin with the Lemurian Age, the Atlantean Age, and our own age, the fifth post-Atlantean Age, as we may call it. Now I add the strength of the luciferic influence as a red line, say something like this. We may say that there was a certain strength to it in the Lemurian Age, and it grew, then became less, and this luciferic strength diminished greatly and was then lost altogether in the Atlantean Age, to rise again in post-Atlantean times. During the Atlantean Age, I am speaking not of individual human beings, but of the evolution of humanity. Essentially, there was little direct luciferic influence. But Ahrimanic evolution, I'll put it in yellow, was particularly strong in the Atlantean Age, growing weaker here in the post-Atlantean Age. I am speaking of historical development, and we have to be clear in our minds that when we characterize anything like this, we must always take account of what I said the other day. Quote, when Lucifer is particularly powerful, he calls up Ahriman in the subconscious. Close quote. So if the luciferic curve is a strong one in our fifth age, this does not mean that Ahriman is outside our sphere. Quite the contrary. With Lucifer most active among the historical powers, Ahriman is particularly active in the subconscious regions of human beings. You see that there is a kind of wavy line for Ahrimanic activity and for luciferic activity in the course of human evolution on Earth. A balance must be established between the strengths of the Ahrimanic and luciferic elements. This state of balance has never been a perfect one in the course of historical evolution. There were times when the luciferic activities were most powerful, and times when the Ahrimanic influence was really marked. If we consider the period of human evolution, when humanity was approaching the mystery on Golgotha, we find that the state of balance between the luciferic and Ahrimanic powers was extraordinarily unstable, fluctuating, and there was no real balance. On the one hand, there was the stream of humanity moving toward the mystery on Golgotha, historically presented in the evolution of Semitic peoples. This stream of human evolution was particularly open to luciferic principles, with the result that powerful Ahrimanic influences were generated in the subconscious. Greek nature, on the other hand, was very open to the historical Ahrimanic powers, with the result that powerful luciferic influences were generated in the subconscious. We will only understand Semitic and Greek civilization, which were polar opposites, if we really take note of this fluctuation between Ahrimanic and Luciferic influences in human world evolution. For the Western peoples, the influence of Greek civilization was of the greatest significance at the time when the mystery entered into Earth evolution from outside. This Greek influence was, however, already getting less, having passed its peak. Greek civilization was about to go into decline. We are able to say, quote, "The Greeks developed sublime wisdom exactly because of the Ahrimanic influence, which became evident as a Luciferic element in their art." Close quote. This wisdom assumed a highly individual, humanly individual character, as we also said on other occasions. Basically, however, it was the greatest, where the things which the spirits themselves had taught human beings shone into Greek wisdom from very early times. We know that in very early times the teachers of humanity were inspired, initiated directly from the spiritual world. The spirits of the world themselves spoke through them. And looking back to most ancient times in human evolution, we can, even at the beginning of the Fifth Age, still discern a marvelous original wisdom. Its concepts and ideas had been purified to such effect that it had adapted itself to essential human nature. In earlier times, it had been presented more in the form of pictures, of images by the great initiates. But the Greeks put it in ideas and concepts, adapting it to human nature. The most admirable thing about the Greeks, however, is the original wisdom which humanity had received from the lips, we might say, of the gods themselves, a wisdom still to be found in Plato's philosophy. Now, however, humanity was in danger of losing this wisdom. Looking back to the time when the Greek spirit evolved, an age which Nietzsche referred to as tragic, we look back on the great Greek philosophers, on Anaxagoras, Heraclitus, and one sees, I'd say, the last to have that divine wisdom, though already changed into ideas and concepts. Thales was the first, in a way, to base himself wholly on natural concepts. He no longer had a connection to the direct, living impression made by humanity's original wisdom, which one can still see in the work of Anaxagoras. That original wisdom was in the process of being lost to humanity. Yet, the human ability in early times to know anything at all about the human being, insight into human nature, had come from that original wisdom. That wisdom was meant to imbue Greek and all original wisdom. The mysteries were meant to provide insight into human nature. Come to know yourself was one precept. But that ancient insight into human nature was conveyed in a roundabout way through Lucifer, and human beings gained it with the help of Ahrimanic powers. It was entirely bound up with the state of balance between Ahrimanic and Luciferic powers. At the time when the old world was coming to an end, and the mystery on Golgotha was approaching from the other side, Ahrimanic powers were slightly in excess. They were particularly strong at that time. The strength of the Ahrimanic powers, above all, caused the inner life of human beings to drift toward abstraction, even the high degree of abstraction we see in the Romans. We have to ask ourselves, what would have happened to humanity if evolution had proceeded solely in the stream which I have just characterized, and there had been no mystery on Golgotha? What would have happened is that people would no longer have a notion, an idea, sentience of the nature of the individual human being. This is an extraordinarily important statement. Humanity was threatened by this because they could no longer be told anything in the way that had come from the gods, because even the tradition of that way had been lost, and they were becoming more and more of a riddle to themselves. We need to get a strong feeling for the truth of this. If it had not been for the mystery on Golgotha, human beings would have been in danger of becoming more and more a riddle to themselves. They would have been able to gain wisdom, but only about nature, not about themselves. And they would have been forced gradually to forget that they were born of the Spirit. They would have had to lose their knowledge completely. Then came the mystery on Golgotha. It can be considered from many points of view, including the one that with the coming of the mystery, humanity was made able again to grasp themselves as individuals from the spiritual heights, which in the earthly field had been lost. The Christ impulse made it possible for people to see themselves again as individuals, but now doing so with powers that came from within. Today it is extraordinarily difficult for people to imagine how those early people gained their awareness of individual nature. For modern people won't believe, one, how very different the external philosophy of life was in those days. One cannot understand the whole significance in world history of Julian the Apostate, unless one knows that he was one of the last people who still saw the sun in a different way from the way we do today, S-U-N. Today we see the sun as a physical body. The influence of the moon as a natural phenomenon has stayed with us for a longer time. Lovers still walk in the moonlight today, rapturous and dreaming. Fantasy grows and flourishes in the moon. In the twilight, the poetry of the moon, both true and false, continues to be familiar to many. The people of old had much more intense feelings when, on waking up, they saw the sun than some people still have in the moonlight today. When those early people woke up and saw the sun, they would not just talk of the sunlight. They were sentient, that something enters into us like a ray from this entity in the heavens to fill us with warmth and light, and that this made us into individuals. Julian the Apostate still felt this. He believed that it might be retained for humanity, though here he was in error, and this was the great tragedy. Their individual nature no longer came to developing humanity from the physical sun ray. This insight into individual nature was now coming to them in a spiritual way, something which the sun out there in space could no longer give to human beings, which could no longer come to them from outside, now had to rise up from deep down inside them. The Christ had to connect his world, destiny, with humanity, so that they would not drop out of the stream of evolution that took them forward, because the scales are continually moving up and down between Ahriman and Lucifer. We have to accept in all seriousness that the Christ came down from spiritual heights to human beings and linked his destiny with theirs. How is that? The strange thing is that when human beings looked into the world, perceptible to the senses, before the mystery on Golgotha, they would at the same time also see something spiritual. I have just made this clear to you by telling you how the sun was seen. This was gradually lost. People had to be given something else instead. They had to be given something spiritual, the spirituality of which would at the same time give them the impression of reality as it is perceived through the senses. That is what is notable about the mystery on Golgotha, and the way it relates to human powers of gaining insight. This mystery on Golgotha, which had given Earth evolution its true meaning, took place in a small corner of the world, practically unnoticed by the Romans. Tacitus did not really know about it when he produced his excellent study of Roman history 100 years later. Nothing is really said about the mystery on Golgotha in history, for the Gospels are not history. They were written in the way I have described in my title, Christianity as Mystical Fact, and are really mystery books applied to life. Whatever efforts theologians make, there will never be history about the mystery on Golgotha the way there is history concerning other events. This is indeed meant to be the characteristic of the mystery on Golgotha, that nothing should be known of it historically, by way of external factual history. Anyone who wants to know something about it must believe in the supersensible. The mystery on Golgotha cannot be proved to have happened as an historical sense-perceptible event. Where the people of earlier times looked into the sense-perceptible world and also perceived supersensible truths, modern people who do not want to lose their insight into individual nature must look on the mystery on Golgotha as something that was supersensible. Looking at the supersensible, they will gain the conviction that this, too, was an historical event, though there is no mention of it in history. Those who do not consider that throughout the evolution of human history there has been no external record made of the most important historical event will not understand the whole relationship of the mystery on Golgotha to modern humanity. For modern people are meant to learn from the mystery on Golgotha, to turn to the factual reality of something about which there are no historical documents. And this factual element is meant to have an effect. What did we say yesterday did really come from Ahriman and Lucifer? We said that Lucifer detracts human hearts and minds from taking an interest in others. If only luciferic principles were active in humanity, we would progressively lose interest in others. It would mean little to us how one person or another thinks. You actually get a good indication of how much luciferic nature there is in someone if you ask, quote, does this person take an interest in others, objectively tolerant, or is he or she really only interested in himself or herself, close quote. Luciferic natures take little interest in others, are rigid, obdurate within themselves, only considering the things to be right which they have thought up themselves, of which they are sentient, and are not open to the opinions of others. If the luciferic principle had continued to act in the same way in human evolution as it did before the mystery on Golgotha, humanity would gradually have taken a course which would have to be characterized as people being inwardly obdurate and uncommunicative, with everyone only considering their own concerns, only considering the things they have thought up for themselves to be true, and not inclined to look into the hearts of others. This, however, is nothing but the opposite side to losing individual nature. For in losing the possibility of seeing the human being as an individual, we also lose understanding for the individual nature of another. There were a great many people, many more than you'd think, especially at the time when the mystery on Golgotha was approaching, in the Greek and the Roman world, in Africa, in Western Asia, who went about as, well, we can't say oddballs, but as arrogant, isolated people who wanted to be on their own. There were many such. And there were also people who made it into a philosophy not to care about others, but to follow only what they had within themselves. This happened because the luciferic principle had dropped out of the state of balance. The Ahrimanic principle was present to excess at the time. This is most clearly evident when we look at the early Roman emperors, the Julio-Claudian dynasty. Only the first of them, Augustus, had been initiated, though in a somewhat questionable way. Among the others were at most those who enforced their own initiation, but all of them considered themselves to be the sons of gods, initiates, descended from the gods. For the Ahrimanic principle shows itself particularly in that people do not wish to live among other people as one individual among others, but to have power, as I said yesterday. That they want to be in power by making use of the weaknesses of others. Those were the two great dangers for humanity at the time of the mystery on Golgotha. Humanity would have succumbed to them if the mystery had not come. Lack of interest in others. Every individual lusting for power. The Christ connected his destiny with that of humanity, and in doing so implanted something in human beings that was extraordinarily profound. You may perhaps understand this best if I tell you in a schematic way what the Christ actually implanted in human beings. I have told you that we human beings have powers which we develop out of our own inherent nature. As you know, that inherent nature really only lets us grow intelligent in the second half of life. I have told you this in every detail and on several occasions. There is more to this, however. Essentially, everything I have told you about people growing more intelligent between birth and death only applies to Earth evolution, and we are meant to grow even more intelligent in the course of the Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan evolutions. The powers which we are meant to develop in the course of Jupiter and Venus evolution are already in us. What happened was this. You know that human beings cannot gain any of the self-knowledge which they are able to gain in the first half of life by their inherent nature. They need Lucifer to gain it. Their inherent original nature progresses. Luciferic principles coming in during the first half of life give them self-knowledge. In the second half of life, Ahriman dampens down this brilliant self-perception. Another stream came into human evolution with the Christ impulse. The impulse that came with the mystery on Golgotha addresses the inmost depths of human beings. If humanity were to gain the insights which have entered into Earth evolution through the Christ entirely by their own inherent powers, they would only be able to do so during the Venus evolution. However intelligent human beings might have grown, by the time they die, they would not be able to achieve of their own accord what they do achieve, because the Christ impulse has connected its destiny with Earth evolution. We live our life on Earth, therefore, but will not be able to understand the Christ impulse by the time we die if we purely follow our own inherent course of development. Surely this tells you that the Christ had contemporaries, his pupils. The tradition of original wisdom enabled them to gain so much wisdom about him that they were later able to write the Gospels, though they did not really understand them. They certainly could not gain insight into the Christ impulse in their lifetime. So, when could they gain it? After death, in the time after death. If we assume that, let us say, Peter or James were contemporaries of the Christ, when were they ready to understand the Christ? Only in the 3rd century after the mystery on Golgotha. They were not ready for this in their lifetime, but only in the 3rd century. Here we touch on a highly significant secret. Let us take a careful look at it. The contemporaries of the Christ had to go through death and live in the spiritual world until the 2nd or 3rd century. Only then did they gain insight into the Christ in their life after death, and were then able to inspire those who, toward the end of the 2nd or from the 3rd century onward, wrote about the Christ impulse. As it was a matter of the Church Fathers being more or less clearly inspired, the works written about the Christ impulse had a specific character. But only from the 3rd century onward. It is because of this that Augustine, essentially so important for the Middle Ages, came at that time. You can see from this what was needed for understanding the Christ impulse. Venus wisdom, if I may put it like this, which even now human beings cannot experience in their lifetime, but only after death, and indeed only centuries later, to have the inspiration of this Venus wisdom come to the earth. I wish the way of putting it were not quite so silly, but there is no other term really that meets the case. It was lucky that inspiration could come in the second and third centuries, that it could begin then. For if one had waited for longer than that, beyond the year 333, humanity would have grown more and more obdurate against the spiritual world and not prepared to accept inspiration. You see that the influence of the Christ impulse on humanity through the centuries of Christian evolution is connected with all kinds of secrets. Anyone wishing to look for them again today will find the most important parts of insight into the Christ impulse only by seeking supersensible insight. Essentially, it was the dead who were the first genuine teachers of the Christ impulse, and I think this is evident from what I have just been saying. They had been contemporaries of the Christ, and were not ready to gain full understanding until the third century. Understanding was then able to grow in the fourth century, but it was also getting more difficult to inspire people. The difficulty was even greater in the sixth century, until finally the time came when Rome created order in the way spiritual secrets were given as inspiration for humanity through the Christ mystery, with an obdurate humanity resisting. Rome finally established order in the 9th century, in 869 at the Council of Constantinople, where they finally got rid of the spirit. All this inspiring ultimately got too much for Rome, and the dogma was established that human beings have something in their soul that is spiritual by nature, but that it is heresy to believe in the spirit. People were to be drawn away from the spirit. This essentially is the dogma connected with the 8th Ecumenical Council held in Constantinople. I have referred to this on several occasions. It is simply a consequence of this removal of the spirit when Jesuits tell one today, I spoke of this the other day, quote, "Well, there were inspirations in the past, but today inspiration is devilish. One must not seek supersensible insight, for then you get the devil." Close quote. These things are connected with the most profound thing, which must interest us if we truly want to enter into spiritual science. They are connected with a form of recognition given to the wisdom character, which many so-called spiritual sciences, especially those which have come together in secret societies, do not recognize. I'd say that there is a kind of deception which is brought into humanity over and over again by the people who know spiritual secrets. This deception comes under the cover of a false polarity. Surely you have heard people say that there is Lucifer and his opponent is the Christ. People establish polar opposition between Lucifer and the Christ. I have shown that even Goethe's Faust concept suffers from Ahriman and Lucifer being confounded, that Goethe could not tell Ahrimanic principles apart from Luciferic principles. This is also the subject of the second essay in my small volume entitled Goethe's Standard of the Soul. This is something of extraordinary importance. The true opposition, as those who would speak truth from the spiritual world have made known to human beings, is between Ahriman and Lucifer. The Christ impulse brings something else and has nothing to do with the polar opposition between Ahriman and Lucifer. The Christ impulse moves in the line of equilibrium, of balance. Something of tremendous importance rests on the recognition of this fact. We will take this further tomorrow. The end of Lecture 11.